Dear Dhamma friends, we have come to the next part of today's mindfulness for young adult session. I have selected another sutta, which is also available in Sutta Nipata. And this is actually the previous sermon or previous sutta just before the rhinoceros sutta, the rhinoceros horn sutta. So this is also from Sutta Nipata. And this is called Dhaniya Gopala Sutta or Dhaniya Sutta. I have selected this basically it is highlighting certain spiritual aspects as well as it is highlighting certain household aspects. So very much like kind of a conversation between the household life as well as the spiritual life. So if I relate the past of this sutta, actually what happened was there is one person called Dhaniya, and this Dhaniya is actually helping with himself and the other his colleagues, his servants, his wife, his children using the cattle farming. And there were many people there, and actually he has seven daughters, seven sons, and again 30,000 cows, like same amount of oxen. So likewise, it's a kind of a huge cow herd. So he is using that as its main income. So basically, that is his agricultural base that which was prevalent at that time. Now he is quite successful, and actually it represents the very typical and what you call this normal agricultural society prevalent at that time. And this person is quite successful in that. So basically the point is, this person being successful in that agricultural society. So what they used to do is taking their huge amount of cows, oxen to different places during the seasons of the year. So for example, this time actually he has taken the whole group to an area closer to the river Mahi, and now it's the beginning of the Vassana season, beginning of the rainy season. So what they do is during the rainy season they don't actually go wandering. Rather what they do is they take the whole group of cows, group of oxen to a very safe place, and they are preparing all the lodgings, and they are putting them into a very kind of a protective area, safe area, and they have a kind of a rest. So very, very simplified version of way of life, household life. So during the other seasons, actually they wander where the grass is available. So there are huge fields of grass, and now he is carrying all the oxen and the say what you call this cows to those areas, and using that rich grass, so they are continuing their life. And during the rainy season they are not continuing their walking, wandering. Rather they come together and prepare a safe area in a higher land and just rest there. And this occasion actually is something like that. So during this, the just the beginning of the rainy season, and they are actually, he is now explaining what he has done. So the very first verse going like this: pakkodano duddha khiro hamasmi anuttare anutire mahiya samana vasu channa kuti ahito gini atache pattesi pavasa deva. Now it's about to rain. Now the time is about to rain, so therefore he is now reflecting about his safe availability of his himself and the other what you call the other people, and his wife and his children and the cows, the oxen. Everybody is in a kind of a safe situation. Even though it is about to rain, there is no harm. Everything is in good place. Everything is happening properly. So he is not bothered about whether it is rain or not. He is not afraid of the rain. So he is in a better situation, because he is now explaining, I boiled my rice So already the cooking is done. No problem now. Everything is ready. And then the cows were milked. So that part is also happened. And then now my family and the oxen, the bulls are also safe and they are living in the bank of the Mahi. Mahi is the river. It's a huge river in the India. So now these people are occupied the river bank, Mahi river bank. And again he mentioned Channa Kuti. So his kuti is fairly covered. So therefore, even though it is raining, no problem at all. Because if the kuti, the hut is not properly thatched, not properly roofed, then he is troubled because of the rain. But now he is mentioning everything is ready and the roof is properly thatched, properly roofed. So therefore, it's properly safe. So there is no harm in raining. So now he is inviting, in a way, a little bit of a challenge. Okay, if you like, you can rain now. I am done with everything. Everything is safe. I'm in good condition. Now, in a way, we can represent this as a kind of a successful household life with respect to those old days terms. So he is having many number of oxen and many number of cows. And he's quite successful in his career. And he already has a very huge family, 7 daughters, 7 sons. And his wife is also an obedient person. And again, he's a rich person. And again, his cows are also healthy. The children are also healthy. So he's in a really successful situation. Now, these kind of situations, actually, Buddha also mentioned, are the situations that a household person can become happy. Now, when consider the household life, Buddha mentioned there are opportunities available for one to be happy by seeing that you have something. You are somewhat with some resources, with some wealth. You already have gained some wealth. So therefore, you can be happy by seeing your wealth. So that is called attisukha. So attisukha means you have earned something, your account has some money in today's terms, and you have a kind of a good house, you have a good a job, occupation, and in that sense you can say, okay, I have earned something. So you can actually be happy about it. So similarly here also, this particular person called Dhaniya is a cowherd. Now he has so many cows, so many oxen, and his family is a rich family. So basically he has work hard, and now he is appreciating what he has done, and he is actually happy about it. And on the other hand, so attisukha and again the bhogasukha. Attisukha means that he is wealthy, and reflecting about the wealth, he can be happy. And again, the bhogasukha means he is considering various resources, what he has, what he own, and considering that he can be happy. Now, this event is something like that. So in that agricultural society, this person is now happy about his situation. And now it is almost going to rain. Now he is not afraid of the rain because everything is safe. Everything is done in a pretty situation, in good situation. But interestingly, so when this Dhaniya is uttering this verse, so this is heard by the Buddha from far away distant place. Actually, Buddha was in the Savatthi. And through the divine eye, he is listening to this Dhaniya's verse. So what happened is, Buddha knew, now even though this Dhaniya is now elated and explaining the success of his family life, household life, this rain, which is going to rain, is a heavy rain. So if he stay here for longer time, ultimately it will flood and he may die because of this rain. But on the other hand, if Buddha go there and preach him Dhamma and do a kind of a change, he may become a monk and they leave the place, and therefore they'll be happy, they'll be safe. Now therefore Buddha intervened to the situation. It's very much like if you can remember Angulimala situation, where Angulimala was killing many people, and they are actually he is actually killing one after the other, and one by one he is killing. And ultimately what happened is, now he is about to fulfill his vow by killing anyone. Now at that time, actually, his mother is approaching him, and even without caring about his mother, he may even kill his mother. But at that time, Buddha get to know, okay, this fellow has a lot of parami, this fellow has a lot of potential, even to become an arahant. But unfortunately, if he kill the mother, then he lose the opportunity. So therefore, Buddha at that very moment, he intervened. He go to that place and intervene in the situation, preach the Dhamma, and he actually go through that whole process, allow the Angulimala to run and somewhat fed up with the running, and then question the Buddha. So likewise, a kind of a good conversation is going on. And then later, he understood, okay, this is the path. Now similarly here also, Buddha understood this Dhaniya and his wife has good potential. But if he is not intervening, then they will be in trouble. So therefore, Buddha, through his psychic powers, he quickly go there and he remain in the sky, and he is now going to answer these different verses. Actually, this verse, one by one, Dhaniya is uttering one verse and Buddha is giving another verse. Dhaniya is uttering another verse, Buddha is giving another verse. So likewise, going like a kind of a conversation, Dhaniya is explaining his success in his household life, and Buddha compares the same line and generate or prepare another verse, and then he answer the same terms. So there are a lot of pun is there and prose are there. So therefore, it's a very beautiful literature is attributed to this particular sutta, and therefore it is really a beautiful sutta. In terms of the literature wise, it is beautiful, and again it shows very beautiful agricultural society, very simple agricultural society prevalent during the Buddha's time, and how people lived and what are the things that they used to become happy, and this kind of social aspects are being represented in this sutta. So when Dhaniya mentioning that he has boiled the rice, and again he completed milking the cows, and again he is dwelling with the family closer to the bank of the Mahi river with whole group, with his associates, and again the roof is quite the sound proper, therefore no problem even if it's rain. So therefore you can rain. Now he's kind of challenging to the rain, okay, now you can rain. Now at that time, Buddha, while being in the sky, he is giving an answer. So what he mentioned, akkodano vigata kilo hamasmi anuti re mahiya ekaratti vasu vivata kuti nibbuto gini atache patta esi pavassa deva. So Buddha mentioned, akkodano, I don't boil with anger. Now actually Dhaniya mentioned pakkodano, indicating he has boiled the rice. Now Buddha using the similar terminology with some mixing some pun into the verse, so he is mentioning akkodano, he don't boil with anger. So Buddha mentioned akkodano instead of pakkodano. So Dhaniya mentioned pakkodano means he has boiled his rice, so he has prepared the meal. Buddha mentioned akkodano, so he is not boiling with anger. Vigata kilo hamasmi, so he has completely rid of barrenness. Now this is the kind of spiritual barrenness, so we'll discuss that later. So duddha kilo hamasmi, instead of that word, that phrase, Buddha represent that vigata kilo hamasmi. So he is free from all the cheto kila. And then Dhaniya mentioned anutire mahiya samana vasu, that means in the river bank I am living with my associates, I am living with my family, I am living with all my colleagues. Buddha mentioned anutire mahiya ekaratti vasu, I am living in this river bank only just one night. So he has come just to help this fellow, he is not aware of that, so he is living there just one night. Then channa kuti ahito gini, now that is what Dhaniya mentioned, channa kuti, so his kuti, his dwelling place is well thatched and well roofed. And again ahuto gini means that he is having the fire, because you know during the old days So it's a challenge to maintain the fire. So they didn't have matchboxes, so they didn't have lighters or any other technical equipment to generate fire. So they have to maintain fire. So continuously they have to put some wood and maintain fire. So similarly, this Dhaniya mentioned, so I have maintained that fire. So no problem, I have fire. Ahitogini. Buddha mentioned the opposite. Vivata kuti. My kuti is open. There is no roof. Roof has taken out. Roof is open. There is no roof. My hut is open. And nibbutogini. And the burning is no more. So he has achieved nibbana. So there is no burning. Atache pattesi pavasya deva. So if it is necessary, you can rain. So you can see the kind of a very beautiful reasoning or very beautiful answering is there here, because Dhaniya is talking about in terms of the household terms, Buddha is talking in terms of the spiritual terms, spiritual life. Now here actually there are some things that we can understand from Buddha's answer. One thing is akkodano, so he don't boil with anger. So anger is something that boiling. Basically, whenever we go through anger, so it burns ourselves, it burns the mind. So therefore, the burning may be through lust, burning may be through anger, burning may be through delusion. So all the defilements do some sort of a burning to the mind. But Buddha is free from any burning. So akkodano. Vigata kilo hamasmi. So he is free from spiritual barrenness. Now this is something interesting. So you know there are certain conducive environment in the mind that we need to maintain if we are to develop certain spiritual qualities. Say if you want to develop loving kindness, if you want to develop say mindfulness, if you want to develop concentration, if you want to develop wisdom. So some conducive environment has to be maintained in the mind. But on the other hand, if you have certain rigidness in the mind, harshness in the mind, toughness in the mind, so that is what called barrenness, where you can't further develop. So your mind is so rigid, it has become so tough. So that toughness, that rigidness is not flexible. So therefore the other necessary spiritual qualities are difficult to develop. So that is what Buddha mentioned here. His mind is completely free from that rigidness, completely free from that spiritual barrenness. So that is what he is highlighting. So what are the points which is causing this rigidness? So that is also explained in certain other suttas called Chetokila Sutta. So there are five kinds of Chetokila, or what we call as the causes of spiritual barrenness, causes of toughness, causes of rigidness in the mind. So they are in a way kind of practical things. So that is one thing is you have certain doubts about the Buddha. Second one is have doubts about the Dhamma. Third one is have doubts about the Sangha. Fourth one is have doubts about your own training, about the Sikha. Fifth one is have doubts about the colleagues. Now say for actually particularly in the monastic setting, say when several monks are there together living in a monastic setting. So if any one of them have some sort of a doubt or any kind of a perplexity with the Buddha, if he doesn't believe or trust the Buddha, then it is very difficult to continue his path. Similarly, if he is having doubts about the Dhamma, about the teaching, then he may not practice. Similarly, if he is not believing, not trusting the Sangha, then again he may not practice. Again, if he is not trusting the path, Sila Samadhi Panya, the morality, concentration and wisdom, if he is not having confidence on that, then he is not getting to the Patipada. He is not getting to the path. Because the path consists of mainly these three components, the morality path, the morality aspect, and then the concentration aspect, as well as the what you call this the other part, the wisdom aspect. So when you are continuing your practice, so you have to adhere to this path, you have to adhere to this training. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so whatever, if ever any person has certain doubts about this sikha, the training that he is going through, then he does not put 100%. Because he may put 100% only if he is trusting the path. He is confident that what I am doing is correct. Otherwise, he may do halfway. Not wholeheartedly, but not putting enough. With some doubts, he is practicing. Then it is not successful. And on the other hand, whenever he is having certain doubts about the other colleagues, again, it is very difficult. So therefore, these five factors Buddha mentioned are the cheto kila, are the kind of causing the barrenness in the mind. And again, Buddha anutire mahiya ekarattivaso, so he is representing this typical monastic setting where one is not having a permanent place, but he is wandering from place to place. So there is nothing called a permanent house, nothing called a permanent monastery, but one is ready to wander to a different place. Vivatakuti. Vivatakuti means now his life is quite open. There is nothing to hide. So in the spiritual life, so you are ready to confess all your, say, shortcomings. Assume that you did something wrong, so you are not hiding it. So that is a very interesting spiritual quality that Buddha highlights. So whenever a monk does something wrong, so he can't hide it. He has to approach another monastic and he has to reveal, okay, because of my unmindfulness, because of my something, I did this mistake. So he has to confess it. So that is one interesting thing that Buddha highlights. So as one is continuing one's path, there is no kind of an inner life and outer life. Both are the same. So you are showing the same situation, same behavior in both situations. While inside the kuti you have the same behavior, and outside the kuti also you have the same behavior. So therefore you have a kind of an open life. There is nothing to hide. That is Buddha mentioned that his heart is open. And my fire extinguished. So that actually we can understand, there is no burning with lust, there is no burning with anger, there is no burning with jealousy or any other defilement. So therefore his life is completely kind of calm, quiet, and no burning at all. So he is attained Nibbana. So Nibbana is shown, basically represent that calming down. It represents the complete quenching. And Achate Patte Sipavasadeva. Now Buddha is in that situation, therefore Buddha mentioned, okay, if it is necessary, you can reign. There is no problem for me either. So Daniya is talking from the household terms, and he is telling that he is safe, his house is properly roofed, and the cows are ready, and everything is in good place. Now you can reign, no problem. Buddha mentioned the other spiritual terms, and then Buddha also say, okay, if it is necessary, you can reign. So likewise, this sutta is going like kind of a conversation between the between Daniya and the Buddha, and we will go one verse by one verse, one by one, and I'll take the other verse next time. So with that, actually, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session to questions.
Hosanna Sananta, Gayani will be reading the questions today.
Okay.
So today we have five questions. I'll start from the first one. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing mindfulness for a year now. During the walking practice, I observed the sensations on the soles of my foot and the walking process. Initially, I can keep the attention on these observations for 10 to 15 rounds without any distractions. After that period, when the sensations start to blur, my mind gets distracted to various thoughts. The distractions happen at the middle of the walking path, which is about 25 steps. I'm very vigilant when I turn at the end, so the turning seems okay. However, when I come to the middle of the path, the mind slips out to some thought which is completely not relevant to anything that I'm interested in. I think he is mentioning I'm interested in. I try to be vigilant and focused at the middle of the path, similar to the turning point, and this worked a couple of times. However, I feel that I'm restricting and holding the mind by force. If I loosen the grip, it drifts and comes back at the end of the path, that distracts again while at the middle of the path and comes back again at the other end. It feels like a bouncing ball or a yo-yo. Should I continue with the lighter grip observation with bouncy phenomena, or try to restrain and keep the focus on the walking process throughout the 1 hour? Thank you so much for this excellent session, which has immensely helped everyone with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think seems like you're asking that at the beginning or during the early stages of your practice, you are able to observe things carefully and you are very much like successful. But now things are a little fading and little bit difficult to get the exact terms, exact boundaries. So I think now you are asking what needs to do. So basically that is how the things will evolve. So at the beginning, actually, because of unmindfulness, we couldn't understand the details. But later, once we develop mindfulness, we are able to recognize various details and we are clearly knowing each and everything. But the evolving continues. So the evolution continues. So when things are evolving, later what happens is, so we lose these boundaries. Then you can't distinctly recognize each and every characteristic. No. With the development of the mindfulness, actually we thought, okay, more and more characteristics will be visible. With the more clear comprehension, we thought, okay, it may continue forever. But there's a kind of a turning point happened, kind of an evolution happened in between. So there are actually things start to fade away. So there are actually, rather than you are holding things with a lot of effort, now actually you have to let things happen in a more natural pace. And rather than holding, rather than strictly trying, you have to maintain kind of a balance of the mind. So things are happening, you are actually looking at things in a more relaxed manner, in a more relaxed mentality. So, I mean, you are maintaining that kind of a distant observation. So while you do this distant observation, things may fade away and you can't recognize the exact boundaries, exact, say, qualities. So that's the approach you have to take. So therefore, it seems like you are going through this kind of evolution in your practice. So you, as you have also suggested, it's a matter of now maintaining that proper balance rather than strictly pushing your mind to recognize these subtle details. Yeah.
Next question, Pante. Dear Venerable Sir, I practiced mindfulness continuously 2 to 3 years daily, participating in several retreats of Miss Envy, I think Miss Sanawane, every year. Last one year, I did not get any chance to practice regularly due to the changes in my job and financial position. Due to distance and COVID restrictions, no retreats as well. I try to practice whatever the time I get, but most of the time it's limited to 20 to 30 minutes maximum sitting and time to time, day-to-day mindfulness activities during the day. I still feel like it is possible to establish mindfulness based on my past experience pretty quickly and waiting for the opportunity. Appreciate Venerable's advice if my thinking is correct, or I should try to keep a solid practice with a strong determination, even to face consequences in my job and financial situation. Much merits for your valuable advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, because these difficult situations actually are helping us also to develop some amount of spiritual qualities. So very much like patience or patient endurance only can be developed when we go through these kinds of up and downs of our life. So we can't expect the life to be always favorable into ourselves. So sometimes things happen differently. So therefore, if we are able to maintain some sort of an unwavering mind, kind of a stable mind, even during these vicissitudes of the life, so that is showing some sort of a maturity in ourselves. So therefore, take this situation as a kind of an opportunity for you to develop that kind of a, say, approach. So actually, when you develop a fair amount of mindfulness, actually that is called resilience, where you are able to lift yourself up without being sort of collapsed, without being burdened. So there are difficulties that we have to face in our life, but rather than being sort of trapped in them, rather than thinking about them, rather than proliferating about them, and rather than getting depressed about them, you are able to quickly recover. So therefore, I think you can parallelly continue a practice as much as possible, because that time that you are investing on your practice will be definitely helpful. So therefore, it is not something that we are wasting time. Rather, the spiritual practice that we undergo is quite helpful to our mundane activities as well. So whatever the life situations that we may have to encounter, so on those occasions, this spiritual practice really help us, and again help us to maintain kind of a, say, unwavering mind, unchanging mind, or kind of a bearable mind, enduring mind we can maintain. So therefore, I like to suggest that you, if possible, as much as possible, you continue a practice irrespective of the situations that you encounter. Yeah, actually the practice that you are slowly developing helps you to overcome and again look at the life situations as an opportunities for you to spiritually develop.
Next question. Dear Venerable Sir, in my sitting practice, the main object is the sensation of my sitting posture. I feel weight on my back, how knees are pressurized, straightness of my spine, hot and cold nature on my palms, pyramid-like posture movements with the breath, etc. Sometimes the mind distracts away, but it is not a big issue as I observe it comes back when I become aware that I'm not mindful of my posture. After some time, when the mind settles, I feel very relaxed and comfortable of being with the posture. Sometimes I observe that the body slowly moves to more and more comfortable adjustments. I appreciate the comfort coming from the mindful posture. I can stay like this for 35 to 40 minutes. If I am delighted and attached to the meditation object, it is possible that I am not doing the meditation in the correct way. There's a question mark as well. And as what he's asking is, if I am delighted and attached to the meditation object, is it possible that I am not doing the meditation in the correct way? I highly value your guidance and advice on the practice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. We can say like this. Actually, when we go through some delightful experiences of the spiritual life, it actually helps to continue. So therefore, it's giving us some sort of a motivation. So, I mean, therefore, this is kind of a blissful experience, kind of a delightful experience, but we gain through our practice, and that is not really that we gain through observing a film or watching a film or listening to a music or something like that, but this is derived from those typical sensual gratification. But now we are continuing kind of a spiritual practice. Even in the spiritual practice, we have some kind of a happiness. So therefore, we don't need to be really afraid of that sort of a happiness, because this is not some kind of a happiness that we get obsessed with. But anyway, you are developing mindfulness. Now, you haven't mentioned about your walking session, by the way. So, you got to continue your walking session as well, parallel. So, there you are developing fair amount of mindfulness, not just the blissful, concentrative state. So, what you have there is more equanimous experience, but it is producing a lot of insight, producing a lot of wisdom. So, that is more helpful. So, later, so what you are experiencing today as much blissful become slowly fade away. And you may not experience much kind of a blissful after 6 months. So, therefore, you don't need to worry. I mean, at the beginning, these little experiences appear like really blissful, really delightful. That is the nature. But as you continue your practice, this become quite ordinary. So, you don't need to do anything for that. But as you are continuing your practice, this the nature of bliss may change into kind of an ordinary experience. So, therefore, don't worry. You don't need to be afraid of being in this blissful experience. Later, it become more and more ordinary. So let it evolve like that.
Thank you. The next question. Dear Venerable Bhante, much merits for the skillfully presenting the very long rhinoceros horn sutta over many months. We admire your capability to link multiple sutras to explain the meanings in a detailed manner. It also avoids the monotony of the single sutta, which is typical in the texts. Appreciate if you can share the document for us.
Yeah, sure. So I'll
love it. Sorry.
Yeah.
If you can share the document for us to keep a reference to the rhinoceros horn with metta. That's the end of the question.
Sure. Of course, I will upload it to the web. At the same time, I will upload to the chat as well. I'll just put it to the chat also.
Next question. Dear Venerable Bhante, can you briefly explain the place where wholesome deeds come in our practice of mindfulness? It is easy to understand that we don't have non-wholesome deeds or thoughts during our practice when we are in the present moment, here and now. My question is regarding the wholesome deeds or kusal and where it connects to the practice. Much merits. That's the question.
Can you repeat? So he's asking there can't be any wholesome thoughts. So what?
No. So he's saying, can you briefly explain the place where wholesome deeds come in our practice of mindfulness? It is easy to understand that we don't have non-wholesome deeds or thoughts during our practice when we are in the present moment here and now. My question is regarding the wholesome deeds or kusal, where it connects to the practice much better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, we can say like this. So Buddha actually show us kind of a gradual path. So actually we have to replace the unwholesome thoughts, unwholesome deeds, unwholesome words with the wholesome deeds, wholesome words and unwholesome thoughts. So basically it's a kind of a replacement. So let unwholesome side fade away, let the wholesome side develop. And now when we are getting to the mindfulness practice, so we have become a good person. We are more developing wholesome side and we believe in the karma. So therefore we undertake only the wholesome deeds and we are using wholesome words. And as much as possible, I am using wholesome thoughts as well. So I am now into the sapurisa. I am now a sapurisa. I am a good person now. So this is what we call as the laukika sammaditti, the mundane type of sammaditti. So this is necessary. And later, we don't stop there. Rather, we have to further continue. So there we are getting to the more advanced levels. Now you are observing your mind and recognize wholesome thought as a wholesome thought, unwholesome thought as an unwholesome thought. And there you are understanding the conditioned nature of both sides. wholesome thought is a wholesome thought. Unwholesome thought is also an unwholesome thought, but they are showing some common characteristics. Any of them are showing certain similar characteristics. They all have the nature to arise. They all have the nature to pass away. Irrespective of whether it is wholesome or unwholesome, they all arise and pass away. So we are in a way penetrating both wholesomeness and the unwholesomeness. Now we are getting to the more advanced levels where you are able to let go of this wholesome thought. You are able to let go of the unwholesome thought even. And now you are trying to rest to maintain a mind free from sort of attachment, free from any boundaries, free from any grasping towards any wholesome or unwholesome side, both sides. So that is a kind of a penetrative knowledge what we are trying to develop through Vipassana. But before we reach there, we actually have to develop the wholesome side. We have to let go of the unwholesome side as much as possible and to establish fairly in the wholesome side. So therefore, there is a role for the wholesome side in the mindfulness practice. And more we develop mindfulness, so we are able to distinguish what is correct and what is wrong. So mind is therefore filtering out what is unwholesome. And it is possible to continue what is wholesome. So your life become more and more into the beautiful side, to the correct side, because mindfulness show you this is wrong, this is correct, this is bad, this is good. So likewise, this distinguishing capacity is available in the mind. So one aspect of the mind, mindfulness practice, is discarding what is wrong, discarding what is unwholesome, and just to develop what is wholesome. And in the Chittanupassana level and in the Dhammanupassana level, so you even understand the conditioned nature of both sides. Either it may be wholesome, either it may be unwholesome when it comes to the thought level. So they have some common characteristics. So you are not trying to bound yourself to the wholesome thoughts. You are not holding them strictly. Rather, you are able to let go of both sides and to rest in the middle. So therefore, it's a kind of a multifaceted approach that we are taking. So therefore, wholesomeness actually has a strong value as its role in the mindfulness practice. Later, actually, you are able to penetrate both aspects. Yeah.
Dear Venerable Bhante, regarding today's Dhamma sermon and the hardness of the mind you mentioned due to the Cheto Kila, does our practice reduce these Cheto Kila naturally, or do we need to specifically vigilant about them to improve the practice? Metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think it is better if we are be vigilant whether my mind has kind of a negativity towards my colleagues. You can reflect. Now, suppose you are living with a group of other monastics, and I can reflect whether I have any kind of a negativity towards my other colleagues. Am I looking at them with some hate, inner hate? Or do I have some sort of appreciative joy towards them? So if I have appreciative joy towards them, then it is quite capable for me to develop the spiritual qualities. And similarly, if I have more faith, more saddha towards the Buddha, more saddha towards the Dhamma, more saddha towards the Sangha, and I am now getting confident about my own practice, so then actually I get more encouraged, my mind become more and more soft, pliable, so that the spiritual qualities are quite easy to develop. So it is good to reflect. Yes.
Last question. Dear Venerable Bhante, there was a question today regarding the delightness of the sitting posture. Can the sitting posture be a blissful experience like the other jhanic mental states? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
I can't say it is to the level of jhana, but it can come to the level of, because you know, in the Vipassana practice, if you are simply exploring and contemplating various sensations available in the posture, it may not take you to the jhana. It may not take you to the absorption, but it will take to the what we call as the upachara samadhi, kind of a neighborhood concentration. It not take you to the absorption, but to some earlier stages. It's not that absorbed. You are not absorbed to these sensations. You are not absorbed to this thing, but rather a kind of a very sort of equipoise you can maintain. And here actually we call it as a neighborhood concentration, upachara samadhi. It's not the jhana actually. By the way, I have uploaded the, I have put the document to the chat, so you can download it. In the future, I will upload it to the web as well. That Khagga Visana Sutta is available now in the chat.
Bhante, that's the end of the questions. Okay. I think we have 15 minutes, 14 minutes, so can we open the discussion for anyone to raise their head and ask a question, or I don't know.
So I hope there won't be any question. So some visitors are waiting for me, so I think hopefully there won't be more problems, more questions. Okay, then actually we can end.
So I will conclude today's session then.
Okay, yeah.
First of all, I would like to thank Bhante for thank and pass merits for Bhante and all your parents and your teachers as well, and especially for Bhante for spending this valuable time for us. Secondly, for all the seen and unseen who has helped and supported this program. And finally, I would like to thank and pass the merits to all the participants, as without you, there won't be this program. So, Avasarai Bhante, Silavantam, Gunavantam, Punyakketam, Anutram, Dullabenamaya, Laddam, Vanditum, Pasitum, Vanditum, Parang, Sariputtadi, Theranam, Agatam, Patipatiya, Saddha, Silang, Daya, Vasam, Kuttaputtam, Namamaha. So with that, I would like to conclude today's session. Theruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sarnai. Sukhi Hotu.